commencing countdown.
3, 2, 1.
This is the Contracting Experience. Connecting government contracting professionals to the world around them through conversations with acquisition influencers, insights into evolving hot topics, and sharing lessons learned from the field.
Welcome, podcast listeners. On this episode of The Contracting Experience, we hear part two of a two-part series with Ms. Alexis Bunnell, the Chief Information Officer at the Air Force Research Laboratory, as she continues to share her AI outlook for Air Force acquisition. Prior to her current position as CIO, Ms. Bunnell was the Emerging Technology Evangelist at Google, driving the use of emerging technologies to drive efficiency and innovation within government organizations. Welcome back, Ms. Bunnell. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So, picking right up from where we left off in our discussion on generative AI, and in particular Nipper GPT, and how we're all more than capable of using it right now, there's sort of an intimidating term that gets used called prompt engineering. It sounds intimidating, like we need to learn how to write code or something, but it's really a pretty simple concept, right? Can you explain what we mean by prompt engineering? And it might surprise some of our listeners with who the best prompt engineers might be.
Oh, yeah. So when people think, well, why is it that I need to do, you know, we need to do research on human-machine teaming or AI? And I will tell you, part of it's because AI is not like other technologies. So we were making the wrong assumptions. So when we think about prompt engineering, what all that really means is how you ask questions and direct your kind of query or your question in a system. So as I mentioned, you know, previously we're all used to Googling it. And so we're used to kind of what tends to usually be these one stream information results. And so what I mean by that is you might say, what are Mexican restaurants, you know? And it used to be that you'd kind of get a list of Mexican restaurants. Then it got a little bit smarter, right? And it would say, oh, well, we recognize you're in this location, and so we're going to show you, you know, Mexican restaurants near you. But what, you know, prompt engineering really does is it lets you have a much more complicated or comprehensive question. So you might say instead, you know, in an AI tool, you might say, well, tell me, you know, and rank for me the Mexican restaurants that are most loved by the locals who live here, that have a, you know, beef burrito on the menu that is, you know, priced between $8 and $12, and that is, you know, within public transportation of one or two stops from where I am at this location. And it will do it, right? So this idea of being able to not just have a simple kind of relationship of curiosity, but actually to be able to have a much more complex or compounded, you know, ability to achieve more in that same question or query. And so it's not unusual at all in our research, you know, as someone starts, they will start kind of very simply, you know, asking questions. And then over time, and this is the really helpful thing, is we began to start to understand how you could train people to be more comfortable with that more robust curiosity. But to your point on who was really good at it, we, like you said, assumed that kind of data people were AI people. And so our data scientists, our coders, et cetera, were going to be the best prompt engineers, right? They're going to ask the best questions. And that is not what we found. One of the things that is so delightful, and I say this being one of them, is that we actually found that moms, you know, mothers, are great prompt engineers naturally. And I started to realize that, and we have lots of conversations with, you know, with fellow mothers, because we know exactly why that is, right? We know that's because when we go into our daily life, we often have to say things like, let me ask that question in a different way, right? Or we may not believe we're getting the entire accurate story, you know, the first time. And so mothers have this really interesting balance of kind of, you know, a critical curiosity, I guess you would say, that we really saw blossom. I think the second part that is so exciting about generative AI is that it really is the first technology where if you, you know, were an English major or are in public affairs or a lawyer or marketing or comms, you actually are going to have, you know, oftentimes a potentially more expansive way that you think about, you know, the type of thing you're trying to achieve. And again, this is really the first technology that is not really just geared to those who come from a STEM background, right? This is actually the first technology in some levels where the better you, the more curious you are, right? The more you're able to kind of lean in and be in that discovery or learner mode, the better prompt engineer you become quicker. So this is just another way of telling your folks out there that if you're listening and you think generative AI isn't for me because I don't come from a math or science or, you know, a technology background, I will tell you, you are probably likely to be even better at it than those folks. And so the most important thing is to get in there and give it a try.
Nope. Excellent, ma'am. Yeah, thanks for using that analogy. Again, I think it's absolutely perfect, right? You don't quite get the answer you expect the first time. So you, maybe some follow-up questions, maybe a couple rounds of follow-up questions. And generative AI lets you do that. So awesome stuff. Thanks for bringing that in. And a shout out to moms everywhere. Get in there, use it. As you say, get your flight hours in.
In our previous discussion, we mentioned another AI tool that your team has published called ACBOT. In short, ACBOT is that long-awaited AI-powered contract writing assistant. It can create cohesive solicitation documents and generate a contract agreement ready to execute in less than 15 minutes, according to the brochure. Some might say that sounds way too good to be true. What can you tell us about ACBOT? Is it available right now, and can it really do all of these things?
So I will tell you, first and foremost, that I have the most important thing I've learned, you know, getting this old and this many years in the world, is to never tell a professional who does this for a living that, you know, that the technology is somehow miraculous. What I will share is that it really is, ACBOT is a tool that was really developed out of the intent to honor and respect the acquisition professional, right? To have empathy, to understand just how much the role took, and to try in its way to, you know, to kind of show up as your ally or your bestie along that journey to figure out how to kind of share that load, right? And in the right times and the appropriate times. So, you know, it has been so interesting to see this tool really and kind of start out with a couple users and then start to grow exponentially. And the growth of it, I think, is one of those validating factors where, you know, we really think that tools that are really geared out of respect and appreciation for, you know, someone's mission, the way that ACBOT focuses on acquisition professionals, is really going to be a huge part of our future with AI. You know, I think in particular, if folks, you know, as long as you have a .mil address, you can actually access ACBOT through NipperGPT. We're excited to start to really try to use NipperGPT, you know, in our research to drive people to some of these new, unique commercial or other tools out there that they can, that can help them, that really go beyond, you know, some of the basic LLM capabilities. And so I think, you know, with ACBOT, I would put this challenge out there. I would say, you know what? I hope it's good. I hope it's helpful. But I think that all of us have to go into using these tools and we have to actually be willing to say, well, this is good, but like, this isn't so, you know, this needs to be better, right? Because I think as we think about human machine teaming, we have to move away from the idea of like some kind of perfection out of the box, right? Because these tools are so intimate and they really are about meeting us, our individual journey, you know, the things that we have to do. I hope that people use it. I hope they find things that, you know, really are helpful and help them shave incredible, you know, kind of toil out and get those minutes on mission back. But more importantly, I hope they get to the point where they say sooner than later, but it doesn't do this, right? And I need it to do that. And if it did this, it would be amazing. Because ultimately, we have to be willing to kind of co-create the technology we want to experience in the future. So I would say whether it is ACBOT, whether it is any other tool that you're paying for or not paying for, you know, really go into it with that journey of and that attitude of curiosity, with that attitude of we're all figuring this out, including the people making the tools that you're trying, and be a part of making them better, you know, making them relevant. So I guess I'll throw a challenge out there, you know, to kind of, I would love to know from those folks listening, what do they like? What don't they like? And more importantly, what does it not yet do that would absolutely change, you know, how they show up to their mission every day?
Oh, that's awesome, ma'am. Yeah, appreciate that opportunity. Everybody can be an early adopter on this, right?
Yeah,
again,
absolutely.
Get out there, get your flight hours, work out the bugs, let us know about the bugs. Again, it's just a tremendous capability and it's out there, it's ready to use. But like you said, it might not be version one that's the end all be all, right?
Yeah,
in order to get to version 2, 3, 4, we need that feedback.
Exactly. And in fact, I would encourage people to understand that, you know, even though some of these things have been out, they're, you know, everyone that kind of signs in, you're a pioneer, right? And you are perfectly capable of being a pioneer, because especially when we think about role-based tools like ACBOT, what we're really actually asking is we're saying, you know, to that procurement and acquisition professional, you are the expert, right? Only you get to tell us if this is helpful, right? If this is useful. And so this is where you don't have to be an expert in AI. You don't have to be an expert in, you know, in querying just yet. You just have to be the type of expert you already are, use it, and then provide feedback on what you and how you want that human journey as an expert to be different. And so people here, I just think it's exciting to kind of say, you know, you may see something or you may make a recommendation that actually changes the technology and then changes the lives of every other acquisition professional out there. Like every person listening has the ability to do that when a technology emerges, if they see themselves as part of the end state.
All right. Yep. Absolutely phenomenal, ma'am. Again, challenge all the listeners out there. Go out, get your flight hours, flight test the thing, provide the feedback, right? Not only helping you, but helping the entire enterprise going forward. So, ma'am, rounding out our conversation on how AI can help us tackle the toil and put minutes on mission, it's really a necessary tool. I mean, even call it a collaborative teammate, if you will, especially based on the plethora of information we're dealing with nowadays. So I think you had a great story. If some of our listeners are maybe feeling overwhelmed or bombarded with the amount of data and data sources we're receiving on a daily basis, it's not our imagination, right?
It is not. No. So I think this is actually one of the really critical moments. And that is when we talk about, or when I talk about approaching technology from a lens of empathy, I don't actually mean that I have to be empathetic, for example, toward you or toward the tool. What I mean is we actually have to start by being empathetic to ourselves. And so, you know, to your point on that story, I will admit that I started my role at AFRL and I have never been overwhelmed in a job by email faster in my history. I thought like, okay, I'm new. So I've got about a month, right, to kind of like slowly, like, you know, kind of get known and build relationships. And, you know, and so I've got a little bit of this breathing time just to kind of listen and learn and take stuff in. And I got to tell you, I think I was at like 300 emails a day by like the end of the first week. And I really had this moment where I had to stop and I thought to myself, well, I'm turning 50, you know, maybe I'm just, you know, maybe I just don't have the same A game. Maybe I'm, you know, just a little like, you know, worn down or tired or just not as quick. And, you know, maybe my best days are behind me and okay, you know, all right. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. I like data. I'm a data-driven gal. So I said, like, let's actually look at the numbers. And so if you're out there and you feel like frustrated, right, that you can't get through all your emails by the end of the day, that you can't kind of walk away from an empty email box, or that there are just a whole bunch of things that you have not gotten a chance to do yet. And if you are wondering the same thing I am, I would encourage you to do what I did. And that is that I went And I actually looked, this happened just kind of, I guess, maybe a couple months ago. So I had been in my first year at AFRL, and I was really, again, struggling to keep up. And I decided, okay, well, let me look at how many emails I give, you know, send and receive, how many, you know, meeting minutes I'm in, how many kind of required trainings, and just other things that, you know, that take up my time. And so when I did that, you know, I came to a particular number and I thought, wow, that seems like a lot. And so, you know, I started to work it out a little bit further. And the first thing I realized is that I had, and I'm not alone, this is not Alexis's special. This is probably true for every person listening out there. I found that I had 60 hours of work in a 40-hour work week before I even started to do like my special sauce, right? The stuff that I was good at. But to put it in even more perspective, one of the things I did is I went back and I said, well, I've got these big numbers, but maybe, you know, maybe it was the same when I was at Google, or maybe it was the same when I was at a federal agency before. And so I actually went back and looked at my numbers, because this is something that I do in every job. And if you go back only 10 years, right, think about that. Only 10 years ago, I was doing 1/4 the amount of email and meetings and all of those things. And that, again, that this is not because I'm special. It's because we truly are in this kind of exponential age. And so what I realized is that, wait a minute, not only have I not lost my touch, right? No, not only am I not losing my edge, I'm doing 4 times the amount of work, right? I'm kicking butt. but I think what's important is, you know, for us all to understand this concept of the exponential age. And so what I mean by that is, you know, first of all, our change horizon, or the amount, you know, of things that we are expected to adapt to, whether those are, you know, new weapons, new methods, new leadership approaches, new policy, new regulation, the change horizon shrank from about a 5 to 15 year average change cycle, you know, really to about 5 months to 9 months. And in some cases, when you think about keeping up, for example, with software, you might be talking about a 2-week change cycle, right? So that is fundamentally different when we think about having to respond at a completely different level of warp speed, right? And I think a lot of acquisition professionals feel this idea of like, it's gotta get faster. The second thing that means is that at a human level, that means I have to make, on average, any of us listening, have to make about 5 times more decisions each day than we made only a couple years ago. And that, when you think about, again, the sense of kind of risk, responsibility, and just the attention drain, right, that processing that much change and that much, that many decisions. But the final one is really the information flow. And so what I mean by that is, you know, this is actually an old stat, so I have to look it up. But, you know, a couple of years ago, 90% of the world's data was created in just the last 3 years. And now we're talking about, you know, just information cycles. An example would be, you know, an average surveillance drone, you know, takes about the same amount of data, insights, and input in one, you know, in one pass than a fleet did, you know, an entire decade ago. And so it's really an amazing amount of information that we're navigating. But what's so even more important is the type of information. And so up until this point, this kind of AI, generative AI moment in time, we had a relationship with information that was about control and structure, right? We wanted to organize, clean, parse, perfect, you know, each piece of data to feel in command and control of it and to feel like we could apply it. But what I often remind people of is that that type of curating, that type of hyper-control-based curating, it takes incredible amount of resources, right? Incredible amount of time. And so what that means is that in most organizations, on average, only 6% of our knowledge is structured. So what that means is that we have to make incredibly important decisions with only, you know, maybe 6% of our knowledge in play. Where generative AI changes this is, if you think about it, a contract, right, or an RFP or an RFQ or an IDIQ or any of the, you know, waivers, any of those things are not structured data, right? They're not structured knowledge. And yet they're probably some of the richest, most important, you know, types of knowledge that we have, similar to for us at AFRL, are scientists and researchers, right? Are those kind of, you know, their knowledge is not structured. You know, most of our leadership, memos, messages, et cetera, are not structured. And so really when generative AI, you know, came along as a technology, it was really the first time in human history that we have been able to put and have a relationship with all of the knowledge, right? Structured and unstructured. So for the first time in history, I can have, you know, a question that doesn't just have to come from an ERP, right? Or a dashboard or have a big system created around it. I can bring information into bear that was never available before. And so when you take that though, what that really means is as individuals, and this is why I tell people, why AI, why now? Because if you are trying to adapt to that level of change horizon, that level of decisional expectation and scale, that amount, navigating more information than has ever existed in human history, it starts to make sense why having a tool like AI to augment or complement our experience and our expertise becomes critical. And so what I often like to say is, if you think about it, whenever humans, our societies or just our humans as a population on the planet, whenever we face times of kind of stress or opportunity, whether those are physiological, psychological, physical, what we do and what we're best at as humans is we make tools to navigate those stressors. So the same way that we kind of invented agriculture when there wasn't enough, you know, kind of hunting and gathering to sustain a population, or we created things like a plow or, you know, trains or the internet or anything like that. At the end of the day, most of those come from, you know, our human existence reaching a point of, you know, of nexus or crisis. And so, you know, I would love to offer to those folks who are listening, when you think about why AI is kind of having its moment now, because a lot of it has been around for a long time, I would argue that the reason it's having its moment is because we are having our moment, right? We are hitting a speed expectation that is incredible. We are hitting the need to make decisions better and faster than ever with more information. And so oftentimes I find if you can think about the technology that you're being presented with, not as the capability or functionality or the vendor or the tool or the thing that's being sold to you, but ask yourself, why now? Why in my, you know, kind of existence is this starting to gain momentum? I think you get to the root of why our human machine teaming, exploration and learning and try to bring these tools really start to make sense at that individual level.
Oh, absolutely, ma'am. Yeah, the right tools at the right time for sure. Yeah, thanks for walking us through that data. I knew it wasn't my imagination.
No, you're right.
Oh, ma'am, thank you so much for sharing your experiences, providing your insight on artificial intelligence, introducing a couple of the great tools developed by AFRL with a Nipper GPT and ACBot. This has really been a great conversation. Is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with that we haven't had a chance to dive into?
Oh, goodness. Let me think of just a few points. I think number one, you are enough. You've totally got this. You could command and use these tools. You are smart enough. You are moral enough. And most importantly, we need you to, right? Because we can guarantee you our competitors are using it. Our adversaries are using it. Another little hint I will tell you is that as you go on your AI journey, you will find these moments where it feels like cheating, right? Because something that was really hard or really took time or pain or effort from you is going to become easier. And you're going to almost look around and be like, is this okay? Is it okay that it made this easier? And what I will tell you right now is, yes, we need you to be as effective as possible to bring that experience, that expertise. And so find the things, you know, that technologies like AI can help you hack, right? Can help you maximize. I would also just say at the very end of the day, I hope, much like I hope for anyone, that you get to try this technology You get to reduce the toil. You get those minutes back on mission. But most importantly, I would tell you, this is only the beginning, right? You know, I appreciate the hours you spend in the crop dusters, but there are some really incredible tools coming, and I can't wait for you to be ready for the next set of them.
Oh, excellent, ma'am. Thank you so much. Again, great way to close things out there. On behalf of the Contracting Experience Podcast, all of our listeners and subscribers, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been a pleasure. And a big thank you to all of our podcast listeners, followers, and subscribers. If you have any feedback, suggestions for topics, or future guests you would like to hear on the podcast, you can submit those via email to thecontractingexperience@gmail.com. As a reminder, you can subscribe to the Contracting Experience Podcast from any of your podcast listening platforms. You can also now find us on Facebook as well as our YouTube channel. Be sure to like us, follow us, and subscribe to receive updates and automatic downloads so you don't miss a single episode. I'm your host, Rob Lorton, from the AFMC Contracting Digital Division, and I hope you can join us again for our upcoming episodes. Until then, stay tuned and stay connected.